Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Broadcasting live, this is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host. My name is your name too, God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location deep within the heart of the American Redoubt, and it is so great to have all of you with us. We are going to turn tonight upside down on its head from what we were originally planning to do. This is episode 13-20. And there was a press conference this week that took place. By the way, you know that air raid siren at the beginning of the show? That's a constant reminder that our nation is in peril, that danger is coming. It's not a fear tactic. We're just standing on the watchtower trying to let you know that things are not right. And we want to give you a plan of action. We were going to cover some of the, the principles, the concepts of the American Redoubt, and some of our goals and our visions. And this ties in with that, but it's not specifically what I had planned on covering this week. Everything that we said last week that we're going to be covering in this episode, 13-20, we're going to put off until next week. Because on Thursday, the 15th, this last week, there was a press conference in Coeur d'Alene in Kootenai County, Idaho, in the American Redoubt. And what I'm going to do is air that press conference because it was attended by some of the leadership of the American Redoubt. We had Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers. We had Brandon Smith from altmarkets.net, altmarket.net, and Representative Matt Shea. And these are all speakers from the rally. And what happened is, many of you know, I covered this last week, media bias covering the rally. Well, apparently there was some mistakes made on the media's part. And they were deliberate, but not by the local writer, we came to find out. Everybody was angry at the local, the Coeur d'Alene Press newspaper. The reporter who wrote the article apparently wrote it in its original form, a fairly objective, middle-of-the-road reporting of the events. He sent it to AP, the Associated Press. They rewrote it and then ran it. He called them and said, hey, you got to change some things. There's some things here that are not accurate at all. And apparently they indicated that they would get right on it and never did. So anyway, this was an excellent discussion because it does go into the concepts, the principles, and the goals that we have in the American Redoubt. But this is from some of the other leaders in the American Redoubt who have perspectives that I want to share with you, because this isn't just one guy out here talking, John Jacob Schmidt, talking about some of these principles that we're speaking of. So even though this press conference originally started out as, you know, in response to the media bias, of the coverage of the rally. John Mackey, who he also spoke to, and he was on the panel, originally not slated to, but they called him up because he had firsthand knowledge of the rally and the planning, and he's involved in Oath Keepers. So anyway, that's what I'm going to air tonight. I'm going to forego the news and commentary. I know, stop throwing tomatoes at your computer and your radio, because it's not gonna help a thing. All right. But we're going to pick up next. There are a lot of forest fires and in Idaho and in Montana as well. So I got a couple emails saying, hey, are you okay? They're in the American Readout. We heard it's on fire and they're evacuating people. Yes, they are around Haley, Idaho, and Rupert. Oh, I had it too. I had the whole rundown. I'm going to post that for those of you who are concerned and interested. There is a link that covers the active fires right now in the American Redoubt. These are wildfires that are threatening several communities and people are evacuating. So you'll be able to go click on that and take a look at that and find out where the hot spots are. A couple things I wanted to share and post up on the highlights and resources posting for tonight's show as well. There is a great article that I wanted to share with you, and it's titled The Difference Between Resilience and Prepping. It just nails it right between the eyes. Really good. And this is from resilientcommunities.com. It's taking prepping a step farther, which is part of the discussion from the panel that spoke this week in this roundtable forum at the Coeur d'Alene Public Library. And then there's a video that I wanted to share with you. Why are we doing this? Why Radio Free Readout? Well, there's several reasons, but why something that's reminiscent of the underground and the resistance from World War II and other conflicts where there was a voice that was used for distributing intelligence and encouragement and information from a concerned citizen to other concerned citizens. It's because our country's changing. There is a YouTube video of a Marine, a former or retired Marine colonel who spent time in Fallujah. He spent time in Iraq. He has seen warfare. And he's talking to what appears to be a city council, giving testimony in, I believe, New Hampshire, talking about the militarization of America. And he says to this panel, he says, they are building a military in our country. How can you people not see this? And he's right. Homeland Security is buying a billion rounds of ammunition. They are asking for MRAPs. There are individual sheriffs and police departments that are getting Homeland Security grants for armored vehicles, communication systems, weapons. There's a lot of stuff going on that the intel that's coming in, I really don't know how to share with you, but anyway, I'm going to as much as I can. My point is, people, you need to prepare to look out for your families, to sustain them, food, water, shelter, medical, communications, and expedite your plans because things are happening really quickly. So anyway, that's what this is all about. I want you to take a look at this video. And this is just one example of so many other people out there that are seeing things change before our eyes. And someone's preparing for something. So hopefully you are as well. Okay, let's see. Oh, I got a little, this is pretty cool. The sergeant major yelled, "Private Philpott, I didn't see you at camouflage training this morning." Philpott replied, "Thank you, sir." Those of you in the military, you probably got that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go right into the roundtable discussion that took place in Coeur d'Alene on Thursday evening in response to the media bias. But these leaders, they deliver so much more than just a response to the media. They actually get into the meat and potatoes of what the American Redoubt and what all of America should be, but what the American Redoubt is. So you stay right there. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
When you get right down to it, nothing good has ever come from any government that promises to be all things to all people. This is especially true when it comes to our safety and well-being. Sometimes I cringe at the nanny state mentality of the globalists, socialists, and otherwise anti-Americanists who think they know better than ourselves just what's good for us. That brings to mind another great quote from the late President Ronald Reagan when he said, "I don't believe in a government that protects us from ourselves." They've forgotten the warnings of our founding fathers and so many others who have gone before us, who have warned us that it's not ourselves we need protection from, it's the government itself. And why shouldn't we listen to those voices? I mean, how could 400 million dead citizens worldwide in the past 120 years be wrong? I'm Violet Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776, or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
You're listening to Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt.
Okay, we're back. You are listening to episode 13-20 on this beautiful Sunday evening at on the 18th of August. We are going to be getting into the roundtable discussion that just took place. And first, I want to remind you that this segment is sponsored by Katie Armor. Katie Armor offers a full line of AR-500 body armor, front, back, side plates, and they have a website that they're working up right now. You can click on the link over to the right on the website. It'll take you right through to their eBay store. They're in the process of building up their company and redoubting. They are relocating to the American Redoubt. And so please support our sponsors, because they are helping to keep Radio Free Redoubt on the air, and they're worthy of your support. Patriot-owned businesses. And also, Katie Armor has donated a full set of body armor with front and back and side panels, AR-500, level 3 resistance plates, and or level 4, rather, that comes with the plate carrier, the front MOLLE mag pouch, the dump pouch, the whole thing. It's a complete set. It is beautiful. And all those details were going to be coming this week. That's going to happen next week. It's going to be a raffle that will be drawn in December. So somebody's going to have a very Merry Christmas. And more details on that coming up. Okay, as I was mentioning, the roundtable discussion. This is a press conference that took place this Thursday in Coeur d'Alene. It was attended by about 50 people. And when you're listening, as you're facing your speaker, from left to right is Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, Brandon Smith from altmarket.net, Representative Matt Shea from District 4, Washington State, and John Mackey, Vice President of Oath Keepers in the Western U.S., and he was one of the rally organizers. Vito Barbieri, Representative Vito Barbieri from Idaho, was supposed to be in attendance, but he was doing state representative stuff in Boise, and he was en route and couldn't make it in time. This was intended to be a press conference and media event. In attendance were the Coeur d'Alene Press, particularly the gentleman who wrote the original article covering the rally that was changed by the Associated Press and really dirtied up by them. Of course, also in attendance was Northwest Liberty News and Radio Free Redoubt. I wanted to mention also that Northwest Liberty News, who is a partner in informing the citizens of the American Redoubt, Jim over from Northwest Liberty News, was also there with his HD camera, and that is uploaded as a YouTube video, and I will be embedding that as well. And by the way, the left to right as you're facing your speakers, that was a joke. Okay, so when you see the video, you'll actually see from left to right. So you know who's speaking, you put a name to the face and everything. But it was really good to have them over from Northwest Liberty News. You can go and check out their articles and other coverage and videos that they have. If you scroll down to the bottom at radiofreereadout.com, you can click on Northwest Liberty News and go right on there to their site. And we worked with them to help cover some of the production costs so that they could come in from Kalispell and produce the video of the coverage of this event. So thank you for the listeners for helping to support that. And we really appreciate all your financial support. It helps us do things like this and other projects and expand and improve. And so it's just very much appreciated. It keeps us going, keeps us on the air, and keeps us growing, which is absolutely critical for the projects that we have that's going to help keep you informed in a down situation. Okay, this starts off with Don Bradway from Oath Keepers facilitating the roundtable discussion. And so I'll just let him take it away here. This is from Thursday night.
Well, my name is Don Bradway, and I'm pleased to be the moderator for this event. And what we wanted to do was bring folks together and talk about basically fallout from a newspaper article that was written following our Patriot Rally the weekend of July 26, 27, 28. I thought it was a well-written article, and that article from the Coeur d'Alene Press was then carried by a number of national sites, and we'll be talking a little bit later on as some of the changes that were made in that article, because they weren't how we'd like to have had things characterized. So we've asked Matt Shea, who is the the official title is
State Representative
for the 4th District in Washington, which is the Spokane Valley, and then Brandon Smith, who has AlternativeMarket.com.
Actually, that's altmarket.net, alt-market.net.
And then Stuart Rhodes, who is the founder, and I think you're still president of Oath Keepers, so he's tried to escape, and we said, no, you have to stay there. And so we're going to be talking, this is going to be basically a roundtable discussion, an opportunity to discuss our thoughts about this, and Jeff, while he's not going to be sitting up here at the table, because he is a reporter, has agreed that he will certainly speak to us about what his article said and his thoughts on some of the changes. So I'm going to leave it up to you, gentlemen.
Why don't you bring John Mackey up here, since he was he's our vice president for Western United States and one of the leaders for the rally. I think he's sitting up here too.
And that was Stuart Rhodes speaking. And then, of course, Matt Shea starts off the discussion. Very well spoken, very articulate, and what a patriot and what a godly man. And we need more of him. So anyway, this is Representative Matt Shea.
Let me start just by saying thank you to everybody for being here, and I hope you don't mind that we just kind of stay seated up here and keep it a little bit informal. But there are really two questions we need to ask today, and two questions that came out of that rally. And the first question is simply this: is the economy going to collapse if we continue down this road? I think the answer is unequivocally yes. The second question that we have to talk about is, should Americans be self-reliant? And I think, again, the answer is unequivocally yes. That's our entire heritage and foundation for this country. Regarding the first question, I just want to throw a couple things out to you. And since the Huffington Post decided to do an article, I want to quote the Huffington Post. The Federal Reserve is printing $85 billion a month. Not a year, a month. That's according to the Huffington Post's own article. And that, to me, is only part of the picture. The other part of the picture is we have at least $61 trillion in unfunded and, as of yet, unaccounted for liabilities to the federal government that we don't have really any way to pay. And that's according to the Washington Policy Center. And I've got the debt scorecard up here, and that's from a couple of years ago. So you can imagine it's probably approaching $70 trillion in liabilities today. I want to read a couple things, too, on inflation. Inflation, by definition, so people understand what that means, that is the printing or the increase of the amount of money in the current system. So in 2002, gasoline averaged $1.44 a gallon. In 2012, $3.73, 158% increase. Let's talk about just other staples of food, coffee, just ground coffee. 2002 averaged $2.92 per pound. 2012, $5.58 per pound, a 90% increase. Talk about wine. I know there's some wine drinkers in here, probably the reporter. 2002,
me too.
And me too as well. 2002, the average was $6.23 a liter. 2012, $10.03 a liter, an average increase of 60%. Why is that happening? It's happening because we are printing $85 billion a month, because we have so much unfunded liabilities that we can't pay, and because we are not making the hard decisions at the national level and the state level to rein our budgets in. It's our job, I think, as representatives of the people, to tell the folks the hard truth of where we're at in this country and what we need to do to get out of it. On the self-reliance issue, I'd just like to mention a couple things, because one of the reporters, and actually let me back up, one of the reporters that interviewed me on my comments on the economy, I just turned the question around and said, are you seriously advocating that printing $85 billion a month, having $61 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and also buying 70% of our own debt is good for America? Is that what you're advocating? Because it seemed like a lot of the articles that were printed and a lot of the articles at the national level didn't really address that part of it, did they? That's the question that needs to be answered. And the burden is not on me to answer that question. The burden is on them to answer that question and to defend that position and to defend the printing of $85 billion a month. On the self-reliance issue, it's been our history. We have an inherent natural right of self-defense. We have an inherent natural right of self-defense. We also have a command for us Christians to love our neighbor. Not for government to love our neighbor for us, but for us to love our neighbor. That means we need to be prepared in case of an emergency. That means we need to have food stocked up so we can help and feed our neighbors. It means we need to have weapons to help protect our neighbors if it ever came to that in a disaster scenario. That's our responsibility to love our neighbors. It's as simple as that to me, but mischaracterized as this people wanting to start a revolution, it always seems to come from those folks that have never been in combat. And as a person that has had two combat tours overseas, one in Bosnia and one in Iraq, I can tell you that no one that has ever been in combat ever wants to see war anywhere in the world, ever. It is horrible. It is horrible looking at the pockmarked walls. It's horrible looking at the flesh embedded on walls in Bosnia. It was horrible looking and interviewing and talking to the kids who lost their parents because Saddam Hussein decided to give those parents to their sons so they would feed them to lions in a cage in downtown Baghdad. Those are horrible atrocities. Nobody ever wants to see war. And so to characterize, particularly myself, but other groups as wanting to advocate a war, I think, is not only disingenuous. I think that it's a patent falsehood intentionally created to stigmatize a group of people. And I need to throw a couple other things out there, too, with self-reliance. I think that everybody should know how to self, and to not only be self-reliant, but to also be able to handle firearms in a safe manner. I think that our daughters should learn self-defense against rapists and muggers. So I would turn the question around to people, especially those reporters that wrote some of those articles. Are you really advocating that our daughters shouldn't learn self-defense? Because that's what was taught at that rally. Are you really advocating that our daughters and our sons shouldn't learn self-reliance,
John
but also
Mackey
the safe handling of firearms?
Responding.
Because that's what
He's
was taught
sitting,
at that rally.
On the far right.
And there doesn't seem to be really any answer to those questions. It's just this continual attempt to marginalize and stigmatize a group of people who are really living out what I believe the founders intended for all of us. I would end simply by saying this. You know, thank you, Stuart, for your comments at the start of this that I don't think were recorded, but we all as Americans want to see a God-honoring constitutional republic restored in this country. We all want to see a country that is successful, a country that is prosperous, not because we want it for ourselves, but because we want it for our kids and our grandkids. And I think that's always something to keep in mind when we're talking about these issues going forward.
I'd just like to comment on what you said about helping your neighbor, because a lot of people do characterize people who are prepared as being in that doomsday prepper crowd, or they're hiding in their spider hole.
Okay, and then here, Stuart Rhodes is introducing Brandon, for those of you who have not heard him speak before. Brandon was sitting second over from the left as you're facing your computer speaker.
The community can survive,
as you'll see when you watch the
video. Maybe not prosper, but get through that so that the government does not have to rush in with limited resources to try to figure out how to help. We want our communities to be self-standing.
So go ahead and make your comments, Brandon.
Sure. Well, I mean, I would, just to add to the economic situation, I would point out, there's basically three primary indicators that the mainstream uses to convince people that we're in a recovery, an economic recovery. The first one would be employment, and the Labor Department would say that employment at this point is officially around 7%. Now,
you mean unemployment?
Or unemployment, I'm sorry, 7%. Now, I would point out that the way the Labor Department collates these numbers, they don't count all of the people who were on unemployment benefits but were on for so long they were kicked off. So if they went that 99 weeks and then never got a job, they're no longer counted as unemployed anymore. They also count people as employed if they work part-time. So if you work a four-hour a week job, you're counted as employed by the Labor Department. So if you count all of these people in the traditional fashion of measuring unemployment, we're actually closer to 20 to 25% unemployment in this country. All right. What's the second indicator? Second indicator would be the stock market. Stock market has had a massive rally in the past year. We're closing in on 16,000. Well, not anymore, not today. Way down today. But we're closing in on 16,000. That's always used as an indicator of recovery. The issue with that is, where is the money coming from that's pouring into the stock market? Well, all you have to do is ask the Federal Reserve, ask Alan Greenspan, ask the head of the Houston Fed, because they've openly admitted in the mainstream media that most of what's happening in the stock market is being propped up by Federal Reserve fiat. They admit this openly. This isn't conspiracy theory. This is fact. So I welcome anyone to Google that and look it up. So stock market rally, fake. Unemployment, fake. What's the third? Housing. Now, there's a lot of talk about a recovery in housing right now. A lot more purchases happening in the market. So, well, that looks pretty good, because one of the original causes of the debt crisis was a collapse in the housing market. However, who's buying these houses? Well, if you look at the numbers and the buyers, what you'll see is major banks are the buyers of most of these houses. They're buying them pennies on the dollar and then putting them out on the market, but as rentals. So, and that, how long can that last, all right, without private buyers in the home market? Those are three factors, the main three factors that they use to convince us that there's a recovery, all right? So what's the real situation? Well, let's look at the fundamentals. National debt, official national debt in 2008 was $10 trillion. Official national debt today is $17 trillion. So we've added $7 trillion in 5 years. All right? Think of the decades that it took to get to $10 trillion in debt. That's just the official debt. That's not counting all the unfunded liabilities and entitlement programs. It's not counting Social Security and Medicare. It's not counting all that stuff. All right? If you count all that stuff, real national debt is between $60 trillion and $120 trillion, depending on what you count. All right?
Like Matt said.
All right? Now, our debt-to-GDP ratio, if you take the official numbers, is 101%. All right? Traditionally, historically, when an economy, any nation, when their economy hits 100% of debt-to-GDP ratio, there's a marked chance of collapse in that system. All right? It's just a historical law. All right? Now, if you count all our unfunded liabilities and entitlements, we're actually closer to 400% debt-to-GDP. All right? These are the numbers that the mainstream doesn't talk about. All right? If regular people knew these numbers, they wouldn't think it was so hilarious or that it's conspiracy theory that we're running a prepping rally.
What modern countries give a good analogy for 100% ratio or 400% ratio?
Well, Greece started going downhill immediately after they hit about 110% debt to GDP. I don't know what their official debt to GDP is. Nobody really knows for sure what their official debt to GDP is now, what it really is. Argentina, another example. Soviet Union. I say most of Europe now is far beyond the 100% mark. Most of Europe is closer to 150% debt to GDP.
What happened to Argentina?
Yeah.
Argentina had, well, they had a currency collapse, which caused about a 70% devaluation of their currency almost overnight.
So, what happened societally?
And just socially, what that caused was riots. It caused looting. There were, if you read some of the books by the people that were there, that I believe Fairfall was one of the guys who was there. If you read his books, he talks about looters roaming the countryside, killing unarmed people, taking their food, taking whatever they could, and moving on to the next farm. So this is not conspiracy theory. This is history. This is just history. And we're trying to prepare people for that possibility within the United States, given the facts, given the numbers, the true fundamentals, the numbers on the ground, in the economy, on the street, Main Street. These are the facts. It could happen here.
Talk about the petrodollar and nations already decoupling from the dollar.
Well, the only thing holding the U.S. economy together right now is the fact that our currency is the world reserve currency. Most countries need dollars in order to buy and sell internationally, okay, especially with oil. The dollar is called the petrocurrency because most countries have to use the dollar to purchase oil, all right? The problem is that since even before 2008, our primary lenders, mainly China, have started moving away from using the dollar in international trade. Since 2008, they've set up multiple bilateral trade agreements with other countries that cut out the dollar. And these countries include Japan, Germany, Australia, India. There's a slew of others. You just look it up. Bilateral trade agreement, China, and you'll have a list going down, down, down.
Australia is one of the latest ones, right?
Australia was one of the latest ones, and they were more open about the situation. They said blatantly that, well, we think the dollar is an empty shell, essentially. We think it's going to go, and we don't want to rely on the dollar anymore. That's what the Australians said, you know, supposedly our buddies. So in that process of cutting out the dollar in these trade agreements, what's happening is you're having a slow kill of our currency. Eventually, the whole world will drop the dollar. It's just a matter of time. And with China moving away from relying on the U.S. as a consumption vehicle, a consumption engine, they're no longer relying on the U.S. consumer as much to buy their goods. What they're doing is they're enriching their own people and turning them into a consumer engine. So now the Chinese are starting to buy more and consume more of their own goods, Chinese goods. All right. So what you see is a process of developing nations and our biggest lenders moving away from our currency. Now, I believe that the eventual dump of the dollar will be in the near term. I believe that'll happen soon. All right, just given the acceleration in the past few years of China's move away from the dollar, China just recently signed a deal with Russia. Russia's now going to be supplying petroleum to them for 25 years. This deal, of course, cuts out the dollar. All right? That's unprecedented. I mean, the dollar is the petrocurrency. You buy oil with dollars, not anymore, according to Russia and China. Okay, so this process is happening. The mainstream media is not discussing it.
And India, isn't India also purchasing oil from Iran? Same kind of deal, cutting out the dollar?
There are deals dealing with gold, the trade of gold for oil with Iran right now. So cutting out the dollar.
But if you discount Iran as kind of an outlier, you're saying
right.
is, well, China and Russia are two big players who have just cut the dollar out. And so it's the beginning of the decoupling of the rest of the world from the dollar. It's already happening.
And
China
with
is drilling off of the Brazilian coast, as I recall, and are they not doing some deep-sea oil drilling so they get their own supplies?
China's setting up oil deals with Canada, Venezuela, Brazil. I believe they just started some kind of deal in Iraq. They're moving into the Middle East pretty heavily. And with the tension and the hatred towards the U.S. in the Middle East right now, with the Arab Spring, with Egypt, with Iran, I mean, Egypt, the Suez Canal, you have 20 to 30% of the world's oil traveling through the Suez Canal. You have 20 to 30% of the world's oil traveling through the Strait of Hormuz, which is where Iran is. If you have civil unrest or a collapse in those countries and those straits are shut down, you just lost a massive amount of oil on the market, okay? And who's going to be blamed for that? Will the U.S. be blamed for that, for pouring a bunch of money into these regimes, these oppressive regimes in Egypt, you know? That's what's happening right now. They're blaming us for that.
So
are they going to want to keep using the dollar to buy oil or to buy goods if that happens?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Given the economic woes that we're looking at, how do you tie that in with one of the main things that we were doing at this rally, which was self-reliance?
Well, I would say that the system that we have now, the economic system that we have now, is based on what I would call centralization. So removing people's ability to provide necessities for themselves and having a central authority that provides those necessities for them, right? It's the same with globalization. I mean, most of our goods come from other countries. We hardly produce anything here in the United States anymore. So that's centralizing it away from the local economy and putting it into the hands of a small group of people, right? So I would say the answer to that is to decentralize. We need to start producing our own goods again locally. We need to start creating our own economies through barter and trade, through necessary skill sets. We need to start preparing for a new kind of economy. That's not this system that's here now, we can't rely on it because it's not stable. It's not going to sustain us. So we need to start prepping for that. And I would say that a good example of the inevitability of this is in Europe. Right now, if you look at countries like Greece and Spain, 50% or more of their economy, their functioning economy, is barter markets, or what the governments would call black markets, all right, untaxed trade in services and goods. So it's inevitable that we're going to have to start decentralizing away, localizing our trade, localizing our wealth so that it continues to circulate within our towns and our counties, and we need to start relying on ourselves more. It's just common sense.
Well, what's it going to take to get us to do that?
Well, I
we have to wait until it collapses before people are going to wake up?
I would like to think that I could convince millions and millions of people I would like to think that I could do that. I don't know. I think the sad trend in America is that people have to hit bottom before they change things.
We have a question in the back row here.
Yeah, when you talk about it happening soon, what is your vision of soon? Are we talking months? Are we talking the next 2 to 5 years? Are we talking...
I think we'll see a major event, at least in energy markets, in the next 6 months, considering what's going on with Egypt and Syria, and the fact that Saudi Arabia may be on the verge of its own Arab Spring, and Saudi Arabia is our primary oil partner. And if that happens, and we see a shutdown of the Suez or the Strait of Hormuz, I think we could see a doubling or tripling in the gas prices at the very least. And I don't think that that's something that our economy can sustain, especially since we're freight-based. So all these trucks rely on gasoline to get all our goods around. So you're going to see inflation not just in gas, but in everything else that relies on that transportation.
Okay, we're just going to take a quick break here because this is about an hour-long discussion. And so I'll try to break it up into like three or four smaller bite-sized chunks. Okay, so stay right there. We'll be back in a moment. We're with the roundtable discussion that took place on Thursday evening in Coeur d'Alene with Stuart Rhodes, Brandon Smith, Representative Matt Shea, and John Mackey, with about 50 people and media and alternative media in attendance. So stay right there. We'll hear more from Matt Shea on this this same response or this in response to this same question here in just a moment. Stay right there.
I'd like to add, if I could, to what you're saying, because sure. It's not just a timeline about the economy either. And that kind of gets kind of the center stage. It's also the fact that disasters do happen. I mean, we had 1980, we had Mount St. Helens. 1996, we had the snowstorm that shut down, I believe it was I-85 and I-90 in Washington State. 2008, we had a snowstorm for 3 days that essentially shut down the roads here, and the store shelves started getting bare in Spokane. We had just a couple of weeks ago the former CIA director, James Woolsey, saying very clearly there is a threat of an EMP. It's not just from another country, but also from solar flares. And a Carrington level, Carrington referring to the event that happened in 1859 that fried telegraph wires in the United States. And the whole implication of what if all of a sudden we didn't have any power because one of these solar flares actually hit the earth like a Carrington level event. And then you also have, 200,000 acres of wildfire burning in Washington just last week. I mean, disasters do happen. So the fact that Americans should be self-reliant is not just based on an economic timeline, but it's also based on the fact that disasters do happen.
And people have personal disasters too. I mean, yeah. Prepping is not just for a nation or a worldwide event. Say you have a tragedy in your family, you lose your job, the money disappears. Food prepping would be an excellent way to help you get through that bad time. It's not just about a Mad Max scenario.
Right, and that's kind of one thing we always stress is that, look back at the generation that went through the Great Depression. My grandpa fished. My grandma grew a garden because they were farmers, and they didn't own their own land. They worked somebody else's land. Because they knew how to grow their own food and how to go fish, they survived the Great Depression that way. Not saying that's the only way you can do it, but the point being is that they were much closer to the earth. More folks grew food and lived in rural areas. Look how urbanized America is now, and as Brandon was saying, now most people see their food comes from the supermarket. It's really, the source of their food is the back of some truck that comes and drops the food off the night before at Walmart. So they're very disconnected from the earth. They're very disconnected from their own ability to grow food for themselves. And that's a very, I think it puts us in a systemically dangerous position as a country. We can't, all these things we're talking about, whether it's a solar storm or war in the Middle East, those are all black swan events that could pop up at any time. But if you're resilient and you have localized economies, you've got strong farmers markets that support local farmers and local stores that produce and manufacture locally, that's resilient. You can handle all those black swan events. But when you're relying on food that comes from South America and Mexico, that's what you eat, and it comes on trucks that travel thousands of miles, that's much less resilient. It can't sustain those black swan events.
Stuart, why don't you define black swan?
Well, it's just, an odd event that's out of the blue. But it's kind of like our economy and our society is so fragile. It's like a long, thin plane of glass that can only take so much. And anytime you drop an extra weight on there, it's going to shatter. And so I would tell people, and I always tell them, look, we have gotten away from what we used to be. We used to be a much more resilient, self-reliant society. And as John was saying, it's not the ideal, it's not the isolated prepper model. That's not what we're talking about at all. In fact, this one training outfit I've gone and done training with, Kevin Reeves of On Point Tactical, he has a good saying that says, training trumps gear. It's more important to have training and knowledge than it is a bunch of stuff. A lot of survivalists get caught up in, you know, piling up all kinds of stuff. But then he says community trumps both training and gear. If you have a strong, resilient community where everyone's in the volunteer fire department, you know, you're in your reserve police department, you're on your local search and rescue team. That's why I always encourage veterans. If you're not in the volunteer fire department, your local search and rescue, or a reserve deputy, you're not doing your job. You're supposed to be your own security. Because in the end, when you have a catastrophe that overwhelms your local police departments, they always do, if the local citizens aren't prepared to take care of themselves, you get what you saw in Katrina. Desperate people who are destitute and dying and unable to take care for each other or themselves, who are reliant on somebody else coming in from the outside. And that's where you're more likely to get civil rights violations like you did there. You had people who were being killed, murdered. People were later on, police officers were convicted of murder, who were killing people, who were just trying to get out of the city. And you had folks locked into the Superdome down there and not allowed to come across that bridge. And you also had peaceful Americans who were just trying to protect their own property, who were disarmed against their will, not because they were looters, because they were armed. So you had an upside-down flipping of what should have happened. It should have been the police and the National Guard working with the citizens together to secure their property and to get them to safety. And instead, everyone was treated like a suspect. Everyone was treated like a criminal, like a looter. So it's a perverse situation. That's what happens when you have the people themselves not taking care of themselves, but outside folks coming in with a heavy hand. So we want to avoid that.
And I want to add on to what Stuart just said, too. It's not just us talking about preparing. FEMA says it. It's on FEMA's website. It says, and I want to quote this so I don't get misquoted, prepare, plan, stay informed. And that's at www.fema.gov/what-mitigation-plan and prepare. They're advocating what we're advocating, that people are self-reliant. So that seemed to get lost in this story when it went national, that we're just doing and we're advocating what FEMA's advocating as well.
Yeah, if FEMA says it's okay, but if we say it, we're not sanctioned by FEMA,
right,
all of a sudden it means we're nuts. So,
okay, that's a really good point, but here's the clincher right here. FEMA does recommend that you store up and prepare for disaster, but what they recommend is 72 hours. Everybody should have a 72-hour kit. So if you store up 6 months' worth of food, a year worth of food, 2 years' worth of food, you are off. You're an extremist now. As we've seen by some of these papers that have been put out to these fusion centers run by DHS, saying if you see certain activity, people who store up lots of food, they need to be watched closely. These are extremists. And so there's the difference right there. Yes, they are. So they do recommend that you prepare. Every American citizen should be prepared. That means you have a 72-hour kit. If you have more than 72 hours worth of food, something's not right with you.
You open the door, which one of the things that some of the articles we had a chance to read of use the term survivalist. And I don't remember hearing that during the entire time we were out there. None of our speakers ever used that term, but it was an easy catchphrase. But more importantly, I think it was a way to blacken what we were trying to do. We were talking self-reliance. So why don't you expound on the difference between, because you use the term survivalist, versus what we were advocating, and that is self-reliance.
Well, we're advocating community self-reliance.
Community self-reliance.
It's not about the isolated prepper. And I tell us to preppers all the time when I meet them, the idea that you're going to hunker down in your basement with your food storage and get through, I think it's unrealistic. It's not realistic at all. Either some private looter is going to come in and take your food, kill you for it, or you're going to wind up with an unprepared community that now gives away their freedom, and you lose your freedom. So either way, it's a recipe for disaster and defeat. I think the only answer is what the Founding Fathers believed in, which is community defense and community mutual aid and preparedness. What did they do? They had militias, which were made up not a butt-crack militia of Billy Bob and his pals. It was the entire community together. All the able-bodied males were in that militia. Everybody was in there. You know, the word militia is now, it's like the N-word. It's like this, it's become the M-word. You know, you can't even talk about the militia anymore. It's so demonized. And in part, it's because a lot of these private militias sprang up in the 90s with the best of intentions, but they were sometimes their own worst enemies PR-wise. They made themselves easy targets. What we're talking about, it's not, you don't organize your community to fight the federal government. You organize your community to fulfill your civic duty and obligation as a citizen to take care of each other. You are your own security, just like your own fire security. When I moved to Montana, I joined the volunteer fire department there because I understood it's a civic obligation and duty that I had. Even as a lawyer, I still did it. Every one of you has that duty because when it comes right down to it, you are responsible for yourselves. And you understand that when it comes to self-defense, the police are not going to be there. Any cop will tell you the same thing. But the same goes for your fire protection. The same goes for your emergency medical. Under duress, when your local EMTs and ambulance are overwhelmed, you are going to have to be able to fill the gap. And so you should look at these as civic obligations and duties. And don't wait for some, you know, end of the world as we know it event to get you off your butt. Go do these things now because it's what you're supposed to be doing as an American. You all should be part of your local security force, whether it's as an auxiliary to the police, whether it's as a sheriff's posse, whatever you want to call it, you should be part of that. You should go and volunteer and take part in whatever civic institutions are there. It's not about the private prepper by himself or him and his little tiny cabal of close friends against the world. And the one thing I hate more than anything else are a lot of these preppers who are kind of nihilists who have this idea in their head that they're going to survive by preying on other people. To me, those are rabid dogs that are going to be shot in the street by other folks who will get together for mutual aid. Some prepper who thinks he's going to be a pirate and go raid other people for their food deserves to be shot. So that's the prepper model that we fight against. And it is there. If you go in the prepper community, the so-called survivalist community, you will find people like that who have this idea that's how they're going to get by. Well, that's unrealistic also because they're going to be shot. Because the local folks are going to form into a security force, call it what you want, they're going to be formed up. And when some lone prepper tries to raid them, he's going to die. And so the answer is not to try to prep as an individual, it's to prep as a community. And you have a duty and obligation. You can call it a Christian duty or a civic duty to care for each other. You cannot just store food and prepare for just for you. That's selfish. You need to look at yourself as a citizen and prepare for your country.
Well, that's I agree. I think that's exactly why it's both a civic duty and a Christian duty, because you're thinking about other people. It's loving your neighbor. It's the natural extension of an unselfish act to be thinking about how you're going to be helping your neighbors in that type of an event. And bringing it back to FEMA, I mean, this is what FEMA advocates. But the question is, why do they advocate that? The term survivalist engenders fear. That's why it's used. Self-reliance doesn't engender fear. Survivalist engenders fear. FEMA believes in preparing, in planning, in staying informed, because that takes the fear out of the situation. One reporter said, well, Matt, what do you, you know, how do you respond to the question that your comments engender fear? And I said, I can't speak for anybody else, but the folks that I met up there in North Idaho, they aren't afraid of anything. They aren't afraid of anything because they're prepared and they want to be more prepared so they can help their neighbor.
Stuart's talked about professionals versus amateurs, where we're all amateurs and FEMA is the professional. And when you read up on some of what happened in after Superstorm Sandy went through New Jersey and New York, and what happened at the FEMA tents or mini centers, I guess, if you can imagine, if you work for FEMA, you come into you're down in Washington D.C. or maybe you're over in Los Angeles and there's an emergency in New Jersey. So you fly your group over to New Jersey and you set up this big tent, and you don't know a soul in New Jersey. And now these people are coming to you for help, and so you check them in. And what do you do when you check them in? Well, you got to ask them all these questions. You got to find out if they have any prescription drugs on them. You got to ask them if they have any weapons on them. You got to ask them if they have any food, because we don't want stuff going on in our tent that we are not in control of. And it makes sense for them to do that because they are getting money, they're getting paid professionally to make sure that this FEMA camp, I'm sorry, I don't want to use that term, this FEMA center is run in a smooth and safe manner. It's for the public safety. And so now they are making all these decisions. I'm sorry, you can't use your cell phone. I'm sorry, we don't have any way for you to recharge anything because we have to use the electricity ourselves. You know, this is how much food you can have. They have to make these decisions because they are the professionals and they know what is best for the community, even though they have no connection to the community. And if that's what you want, if that's what you want in case of emergency, then FEMA is for you. But if you want to still be in a heightened mode of alertness, but still be your own family, your own person, then you need to get your community to a level to be prepared so you don't have to rely on professionals coming in and directing you.
I would also add that just the simple act of preparedness and making yourself self-sustained, you are doing immense good work for your community, because what you've done is you've removed yourself as one more desperate person in a crisis situation. If you're a desperate person, there's not much you can do for other people, but if you're a prepared person, then you can help other people. So the more people who are prepared in that crisis situation, the less desperate people there are wandering around, all right? And I think that's a serious concern. I would rather live in a town filled with prepared people than unprepared people. I think that's another thing that's common sense.
One of the reasons we wanted to have you all come together when we wanted this discussion was because Jeff Saudi is our reporter from the Coeur d'Alene Press, and he wrote the original article, which was then carried by how many different media sites?
Where it went to the AP,
okay,
where they rewrote the story.
Yes, okay.
And I found this out because I originally made a mistake in the story when I identified Pierce as a former state legislator, because he had said on the stage that he got involved in the legislature 25 years ago. I made a leak that I didn't verify. So I got a call from the AP saying, is this true? And I said, well, let me call Pierce. So I called John Mack. He got Pierce's phone number, called Pierce, apologized, got it straight, called back AP, sent them that correction from that made the mistake on. And I talked to John Miller at the AP, and we got to talking about the story, and he indicated that he had rewritten the story in a way that Pierce was advocating for a constitutional convention and not trying to fight against the constitutional convention.
Right. Which,
and I said, boy, you need to change that right now. I said, you better get something out there. And apparently that didn't happen, because the Lewiston Tribune, the Spokesman Review locally picked it up, and there was a big... they posted it on their blogs, and there was a whole bunch of comments going back and forth. And so I called Dave Oliveira, the Spokesman Review, and said, and I think that you had complained to Dave Oliveira.
We went out on social media. That's my that's what I did there. It's my typical way of dealing with things like that. And we requested a formal retraction because it was demonstrably untrue. That
right.
fact, and they had printed it without verifying any sources, and they did pull both those articles, although...
That's after I called them.
Right, after, yeah.
It out. And so they were, you know, they got it straightened out. Eventually, AP got a correction out there, but it took them a little while.
Well,
but that was, I mean, it had already hit Huffington Post. I mean,
it was everywhere.
It did go viral.
As a medium news cycle.
But, and it wasn't just, and I want to be clear on that, it wasn't just that they were advocating for an Article 5 convention. It was quoted as, we wanted to rewrite the Constitution.
Right.
And that's how it went out in the story. And I mean, clearly, at least none of us publicly advocated for anything like that, and we clearly advocated actually against that,
absolutely.
And particularly Dale Pierce. Yeah.
But I wanted to thank you, and I want everybody here, from the source, the original source, that story that we saw in the CDA Press was accurate, and it was those other guys who took it and ran with it and turned it around. And I don't remember you ever using the term survivalist.
No, I didn't.
No, but that, I got all kinds of feedback from folks. Oh, you're one of those guys. smiling. But it's important that you all understand that our local guy had it right. And so those are guys. Thank you.
That's funny that they also tacked on the term to tea party.
Yeah.
It was a tea party event.
Right.
It's really kind of funny. But yeah. what gets me, though, is the undercurrent in the national media is basically that by even suggesting or even saying that he believes it's inevitable, this is some kind of way out there, kooky thing to say.
Yep.
And to prepare for anything like that is even way kookier and crazy. And I just want to let folks know that, you know, it used to be in this country, we had during the Cold War, we had a 3-year grain reserve. That's what the U.S. government determined they needed to have in case of a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. And so back then, it wasn't kooky to prepare for, you know, worst-case scenarios like that. Today, I would say that China right now has its finger on an economic neutron bomb. All they'd have to do is dump U.S. treasuries. If we got an exchange with North Korea, for example, and China sided with them and decided that as a war measure they were going to hit us economically, they can do nothing more destructive than just to dump U.S. treasuries and dump the dollar finally and start the run on the dollar. And it'd be like a neutron bomb because it would kill the people with starvation and mass hunger. We don't have, they don't fish and they don't farm and they don't grow food. Well, what happened to them? It'd be much like what happened in Germany. I encourage all of you to go read a book called When Money Dies. Yeah. It was written over a decade ago. It's about what happened in Germany and Austria and Hungary in the great inflation they had, hyperinflation in the Weimar Republic. And they talk about there how even though you had money to go buy food, the farmers were not sending the food to the cities because the farmers determined correctly that what's the point in sending our food to the city to get worthless marks in exchange? We'll just keep it, eat it ourselves or use it for barter. And so you wound up with people fleeing the cities, going out to the country with bags of the family silver and all their heirlooms and trying to get a bag of potatoes. You know, you had farmers getting grand pianos for a bag of potatoes. So that's what happens when money dies. And so that's what's possible in this country. And so we don't have a grain reserve anymore. We don't have 3 years. Now we have nothing. And so I think our government has dropped the ball. They are not preparing the people. They are not seeing this for the reality of the threat that it really is. And they're not doing anything to prepare the American people. What is the U.S. government focusing on right now? What are they doing as far as domestic security preparedness? They're buying ammo. And they're buying MRAPs. They're buying armored vehicles. And just
fully automatic weapons.
Just recently we had the Concord, New Hampshire Police Department put in a request to DHS for an armored vehicle to deal with Free State Project people because that's the domestic security threat they see as most serious. And so whether you agree with it or not, their preparedness is not preparing to feed you. They're not prepared to feed millions of Americans. What they're prepared to do is control millions of Americans. And so I think what you'll see is what we saw in Katrina, where if there's an economic collapse, I see them closing off the cities, letting the cities implode and burn to the ground, not giving a whit's care about the people inside those cities. The same thing happened in Katrina. They were not allowed to leave. They were left there at the mercy of the gangs and the looters. So that's what I see coming. So if you want to stop that from happening, you have got to prepare, and you're going to have to build up that grain reserve. We're going to have to do it. The people ourselves should do it. And it shouldn't be a left-right issue. You would think liberals would love local farmers' economies and organic food being grown and folks growing their own food in their own backyard. You'd think they'd be all about that. And a lot of them are. But not Huffington Post, not Rachel Maddow. If you dare to grow your own food, you're some kind of a kook.
Well, I would like to tack on to that a little bit, too. How selfish is it not to be prepared? I mean, ultimately, you know, we hear this going back and forth. And ultimately, the genius of our founders was when they researched throughout history, they saw that one big republic made up of several smaller republics, the states, made up of the counties below that, that the states and the counties were supposed to deal with these internal problems, and the federal government, the national government, as they called it at that time, was supposed to deal with those external threats. That was the genius of the system, that the local folks were supposed to be self-reliant as a community. And, you know, on this issue of the economy collapsing, how many economists have said if we continue down this road, it's going to collapse? How many sitting politicians, leaders, Senator DeMint says if we're going to continue down this road, it's going to collapse. How many people have said that? So it shocked me a little bit that this was suddenly some new thing out of North Idaho
that was said. I mean, people have been saying this for years. Ron Paul. And the other part of that, too, is if you're going to criticize us, then please, I would love to be wrong, but bring me facts that counter what I said. Somebody bring me facts to say it's not $61 trillion. Maybe it's a little less. But bring me some facts that counter basic third grade math that we can't continue to do this. And you know what? It has not happened. No one has taken that challenge up because they can't. Because all of this is clear, demonstrable truth.
And show us where in history a country has printed and inflated their currency to this degree and then everything was fine and continue to go on doing that. Show me where it's ever happened before. You can't show it. It has never happened before.
If you're an amateur radio operator and you believe in the American Readout movement, contact us today to find out how you can join the American Readout Radio Operators Network.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Last week, I, along with many of my Republican colleagues, introduced a series of state sovereignty bills to exempt Washington from participation in a nationalized health care system, in a national cap-and-trade program, and also to protect our right to bear arms through the Washington Firearms Freedom Act. The Democrat response? The Speaker pro tem of the House claimed Republicans wanted to leave the Union. Local Senator Chris Marr even inferred to a group of constituents that Republicans are racist. Next, are they going to say that the Republican Party is a militia? Well, you know you're making gains with a response like that. State sovereignty is about keeping the nation together and fighting Democrat attempts to destroy small business through bigger government. Nationalized health care and a national cap-and-trade program are not going to lead us out of this recession. They're going to further crush our economy. But the bigger point here is that President Barack Obama and Democrats like Senator Chris Marr have created a cloud of fear that is overshadowing this country. Businesses are afraid to build new factories, buy new equipment, or hire new employees because of the uncertainty surrounding what new regulations, mandates, and taxes are going to come out of Washington, D.C. and Olympia. The people are afraid of proposed gun bans and rationing of ammunition, so they're cleaning out store shelves. Fear and anxiety are everywhere. State sovereignty is about hope. If the federal government would just get out of the way and stay in its constitutionally designed box, we would be free to fix our own problems right here in Washington. If we need to fear anything, it's the notion that more socialism is going to solve our economic crisis. Instead, we should look to 2 Chronicles 7:14 for the answer. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up with the final segment. Like I said, this was over an hour. It's like an hour and 15 minutes. But what a great discussion that I just wanted to share with you guys. This is so much in line with what I've been saying. And it's just an affirmation. And so good to know we've got very intelligent, educated, well-spoken leaders in the area that are speaking out. And so hopefully you're finding all of this as an encouragement. So we'll go ahead and wrap this up with this last segment. And as soon as it plays out, then I'll go ahead and wrap up the show. But I want to remind you that this segment is sponsored by AMP3. AMP3 Medical, that's Austere Medical and Practical Preparedness Project. AMP3 Medical handles medical and specialty gear for the prepared citizen. You can visit them by going to www.amp-3.net, or you can just simply go over to the right side of the screen there on radiofreereadout.com, click on the link that will take you right on through to AMP3 so you can become prepared to meet your medical needs. Remember also, they have a sale going on right now for the college student returning back to school. For these parents that are sending your kids off, they have an Amp 3 IFAC with a Molly pouch, and that's the first aid kit, individual first aid kit, Amp 3 IFAC. And you have your choice between red, black, or coyote brown. And that sale is going to go on until September 8th. So go ahead and get that ordered today. You can also see them and visit them at the Sustainable Preparedness Expo at the Spokane County Fairgrounds and Expo Center on Sunday, September 22nd. So we've got just about 4 or 5 weeks coming up before that. And register now because there's a limit of 20 people for David's class over there at USNER Doc. He's got that very popular YouTube channel. He's going to be putting on classes on advanced wound care, so you don't want to miss out on that. Wound care. It's kind of funny the way I said that. After the show, after this last piece airs, don't forget to check out the Partisan Diaries. It is the last, part six of the Quiet... It's segment six, which is the last part in a six-part series of part one, the women of World War II from the Partisan Diaries. And if you did not catch that at the beginning of the show, you'll be able to catch that right after the show. And this one is the story of Vera Adkins, the British woman who trained many of the women you've heard about in some of these diaries. And also I have probably read about, if you've read World War II, Resistance and Partisan History, she was one of the ones who trained many of these women. So anyway, let's go ahead and continue with this roundtable discussion, and then we'll wrap everything up.
In fact, a good example Brandon could probably elaborate on is the pound sterling. What happened to the pound sterling?
Well, actually, the pound sterling lost its world reserve status in a creepily similar way to how I think we'll lose our reserve status. They were the petrocurrency back in the 1950s, and they had general control over Egypt and the Suez Canal, and there was a civil war led by the Muslim Brotherhood, okay, which exists today still and is in the midst of starting a civil war today. Americans and the French were the primary holders of British treasuries at that time. They wanted to have more control over the oil market, so they threatened to dump British treasuries if they didn't pull out of Egypt. All right. Eventually, the British had to. The Civil War was successful against King Farouk of that era. The Americans moved in as the primary petrocurrency eventually. You saw about a 16% inflationary situation within Britain. They lost a major portion of their economy, and they've never really quite recovered since. Now, that was a mild situation where they lost world reserve status, but they weren't printing like crazy to try to support their economy at the time. Okay, we are, all right? Our situation is almost exactly the same. We are the petrocurrency of the day. We have massive interests in the Middle East, which are now falling apart, all right? And we have countries like China, which are slowly removing the dollar as the world reserve. It's the same situation.
Except that you can say that we're a mix between the pound sterling and the German mark,
right,
of the 1920s and 30s.
Because we're buying our own treasuries, or the Federal Reserve is buying our own treasuries. So the only reason our government is able to sustain itself at all is because the Federal Reserve prints dollars and then buys our debt. So we're essentially, and then we get taxed for it. So we're essentially buying our own debt in order to keep the government running. And that's like, you know, paying off credit card bills with other credit cards. I mean, has that ever worked for anybody? I don't think it has.
In the German experience, what they did is they were paying off the war debt and the reparations they had to pay with fiat currency. And at a certain point, the other countries said, we don't want this. We want land. And they took land. France took some coal land, and Belgium took some land also from Germany to get the actual mineral resources. That's what happened to them.
So what happened was the Germans inflated their currency so much that other countries wouldn't accept it as payment on debt. So what happened, these other countries demanded commodities and tangible goods. They demanded timber and iron and all these other commodities that the Germans had in exchange for paying the debt. Now, I would point out that China has now, for the first time, been allowed to buy U.S. banks and major U.S. companies and even U.S. land. So, you know, is that reparations for the fact that our dollar may be collapsing soon? I mean, that's, I don't know. It's hypothetical, but I would say that it fits perfectly with history.
Well, also, they're buying banks that were bailed out by the Fed.
By the Fed. Right.
So on our backs, our money's been devalued to bail out these banks that then China turned around and bought. So, you know, we're kind of going down the same road. It's pretty frightening to look at the parallels. So that's why, you know, we think that in addition to the civic duties we should all have anyway, we see these as imminent threats that we need to warn people about. And I don't care if someone calls me crazy for warning you about it. I'm past that. I could care less. And they demonize me just for speaking out against Obama, even for saying the same things that I said against Bush. I haven't changed. What's changed is the guy in the White House and the political party that's now untouchable. You can't criticize them or they call you a racist because he's black. I could care less what color he is. You know, Bush was an oath breaker, and so is Obama. They're both almost identical. So anyway, I think that the big point, though, is that, sadly, as Brandon said earlier, the mainstream press, with very few exceptions, doesn't even want to take this issue seriously. Why is there not a huge expose in the New York Times or the Washington Post or Washington Times about the unsustainable situation we're in economically and how this parallels what happened in other countries? Very, very shocking parallels in recent history. You know, when the mark fell, it was about a 65%, 75% devaluation in a matter of weeks. Well, the rest of the world dumped the mark. The same thing is possible to us. Why is there not exposés on that? And why is it when you get a reporter who looks at something like Matt Shea saying this, how come they don't say, and other economists or economists have backed him up and said this? They'll go and back up SPLC's slander of Matt and go dig and find all that.
Define SPLC.
Huh?
Define.
A Southern Poverty Law Center. They'll go and dig and find what the SPLC says about Matt Shea, but they won't go and find what some Nobel Peace Prize-ing economist has said that backs him up. So it's really kind of sad.
It's
like kindergarten.
Is that we don't have more legislators who are saying the very same thing that Matt did, that Vito Barbieri did, that Steve Vick did. They have the backbone to stand up and say these things and let the public know who they are and how they feel. And it's a tragedy, as far as I'm concerned, that we don't have more Matt Shea standing up and say, you need to do this because, and here's the facts, why.
Or Ron Paul, he's been saying this for decades. He's been telling people, warning people, look, if you keep going down this road, these are the historic parallels, you're repeating history. And he's been right. But no one listens to him, or very few people do.
Ron Paul called the derivatives bubble back in 2002, and everybody laughed at it. And then it happened, and then nobody gave him credit, in the mainstream anyway. So, you know, I mean, people were calling the derivatives collapse for years before it happened.
And now Summers,
the Federal Reserve being the danger that it is.
And wasn't Summers the inventor of the derivative?
Summers from Enron? I believe the Enron guys were responsible for the
derivative. No, I'm talking about the guy who is number one on the list for Obama appointing as the new Federal Reserve.
Yes, partly responsible for that.
Yeah, so the guy that brought us the derivative and the derivative market is now not slated because... that question was asked our president a couple of days ago, and he wouldn't commit to whether or not he was going to nominate Summers as the new Federal Reserve
And that brings up a good point. Look at who they put in charge of the Treasury over and over again. It's the same Wall Street bankers who benefited from the bailout. It doesn't matter whether it's Bush or Obama. Who do they put in power? And who supports both campaigns?
It's the triangle trade of Wall Street, Treasury Department, Federal Reserve.
Yes, yeah, Iron Triangle. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think too we have to look a little bit closer to home. I mean, there are between 30 and 35,000 Slavic-speaking people in the greater Spokane area alone. Ask them what they see coming in this country as a parallel to what they saw happen in Ukraine and Russia. Their head pastor is more than happy to talk about what they saw happen in the persecution that he had to go through. But on the currency issue, it happened there recently. We're talking within the last 20 years those things happen in Ukraine and Russia. They know what it looks like, and they're talking about these things as well. And there was a tremendous positive outpouring of support for all of us I saw on social media and actually on some mainstream sites under the comment section about, hey, yeah, if we continue going down this road, it can't end well, and we have to be self-reliant on top of it regardless of what happens on the economic side. I want to say one more thing, and it's this, because he brought up the term crazy. Nobody I talked to advocated for any kind of a war with the federal government. No one.
Who was saying that?
Well, they were implying it in some of the articles that I was seeing online. Huh. And particularly the article that said Tea Partiers, get your guns kind of thing. They were implying that that's what the case was. But very interestingly, nobody in the media did an expose or story on the following. This is a direct quote from a post on my Facebook site by Mr. Gordon Hilgers, who claims to be an academic on the liberal side. Did you ever think, Matt Shea, that the very best that could happen to Marxists everywhere would be another American Civil War? Once the big dog called, America goes down like a bag of dirt due to internecine fighting, all bets will be off. And rest assured, the commies will no longer be convenient spectators for the righty-tighties, but the world's new overseers, you Dumbo. End quote. That's insane, okay? That is crazy. He's advocating for a civil war in this country, and he's on the left. No one did an expose about that. No one. And the Spokesman Review looked at this site and never did anything about it, just to drive that home.
Okay. It's very difficult to hear the question that this woman has from the audience. But what she was asking is, with the local area, the disaster response team, with FEMA being involved with them, and our tax dollars supporting that, why is not the media pointing out that they are stockpiling as well? And once again, it goes back to them stating that, oh, and also that they train regularly, they have drills, they run scenarios, they meet monthly, and they prepare for disaster and how to respond to that. So if we are taking classes like we did at the rally, if we are taking courses on preparedness, then we are extremists. And this is why. Because you are supposed to rely and depend on the government to come and save you. Even though we've had government officials all over the place tell us, people, we cannot defend you. You need to be prepared to protect yourself. We cannot feed you. You must be prepared to feed yourself. And now, but see, these are the lone wolves who say those kind of things, because the media especially has really helped with this. If you strive towards self-sufficiency, if you don't depend on the government, something's not right with you. And so that's why the media doesn't, if you want to prepare for a disaster, if you want to be self-sufficient, if you want to train for a disaster, then you need to join the FEMA Corps. You need to join CERT. You need to get involved on a government level because they're the professionals, right? And so basically, this is just the mentality, that paradigm that we've seen kind of creep in to our culture. And it's sad, but it's the way it is.
Well, Stuart mentioned the FEMA grants that go to preparedness just locally. I mean, that's where I'd go with that. I mean, clearly nobody is calling that absurd or beyond the pale. Clearly, preparing is the right thing to do. It's an American tradition because it's not just about us. It's about helping our neighbors and loving our neighbors.
I think a lot of this is also just a partisan thing. It's like, that's why they had to tack on the word Tea Party, to make it sound like this is a political group of right-wing fanatics who are political opponents. It's that left-right paradigm thing. And look how crazy they are. You know. So I think that's part of it, is to make it political and make this about your political opponents. And I don't care what party you're in. It shouldn't make a difference whether you're Republican or Democrat. You're all Americans. You all have responsibilities. And this is about taking care of ourselves, not because Obama's in office, taking care of ourselves because Bush ruined the economy, and Clinton before him, and Bush Sr. before him, and on down the line. This has been a compiling disaster that's been coming down on us. We're paying the bill now. It's coming due. And so Obama didn't start this. He just continued it. So it's not about left or right. You know, it's about preserving our country and preserving our lives. That's what we're concerned about, and our liberties.
Brian, and please don't leave out Congress in this, too.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, every cycle, I mean, the Republicans spent like drunken sailors under Bush. There was almost no limit to what they would pay for. They were just as bad as the Democrats are. It's like a sports team. You know, one side has their face painted blue. The other side has their face painted red. When their team has the ball, if you criticize their team, you're a traitor, you're not a real American, et cetera, et cetera. You're some kind of crazy person. And I heard that from the Republicans. When I criticized Bush or anything the Republicans did during the Bush administration, they assumed I was liberal because I was opposing Bush, and they called me a traitor because I dared to question the president. And so now we have the same mindset among the Democrats. It seems like they only care about the Constitution when they're not in power, and I think it's kind of sad. So, but there is a growing third part of the population that's consistent in its defense of the Constitution. They don't care who's in power, and some of those folks are on the political left, like Turley. Professor Turley is a good example of that. I think Naomi Wolf's a pretty decent example of that. They're more consistent. They dare to criticize even Obama when he's in office. What's the reporter that Snowden leaked his stuff to? What's his name?
Not Hastings.
No, Hastings dead.
Hastings dead.
He might have leaked it to Hastings, huh?
Greenwald.
Yeah, Greenwald's a really good example. You know, so there are people on the left who are consistent, and I would consider myself and others, you know, Matt Shea and Brandon and all of us to be, you know, on the libertarian right, to be consistent in our defense of the Constitution. I don't care who's in office. So, but if you dare to do it right now, you're going to be attacked by Democrats. If Romney would have won, I'd be attacking Romney for doing the same stuff, and I'm sure it would have been the exact opposite. We'd have had neocons attacking me as being some kind of traitor to the country, because I'm criticizing the president. And we might actually have more leftists who are open to our message, I hope.
I would also say that there's, I mean, in my opinion, there's sort of a sad predominance of state worship in our country right now. And this idea that you don't rock the boat, especially when you're in it. And we get a lot of extra vitriol aimed at us because we're critical of the state's role in the problems that are happening right now. I mean, FEMA doesn't get criticized for preparedness talk because they're not critical of the government, and we are. So I think that's the difference. We're getting attacked as kooks and conspiracy theorists because we're critical of the system itself, and that you just don't do that. You just don't do that.
Well, and as I mentioned to you guys earlier today, you know, we've learned this from the IRS scandals and the NSA stuff through Snowden, is that now Americans have a real fear of assembly because they're afraid, they don't want to rock the boat, as you said, because now their name goes on a list. Maybe the IRS is going to now investigate their taxes, or maybe the NSA is going to pick up one of those, how many words there are they looking for on your emails? Anyway, 250 of them or whatever, and they may pick up something. And so now, you know, people are afraid to associate with other people because of what kind of information is going to be shared out there about them.
And so you're basically building really the modern equivalent, or actually better than, Stasi East Germany, where you're always worried that Big Brother really is watching and listening. And so you self-censor. And one of the things that happens to people is, well, they're being shaped into, well, you can't go too far outside of the mainstream. Here's a little box you're allowed to think in. If you dare to get outside of that, they're going to demonize you. They're going to attack you. They're going to put you on a list. Free staters, people who moved to New Hampshire to have a more libertarian life, are now considered by the police chief there in Concord, New Hampshire, to be potential terrorists, and he wants an armored vehicle to use against them. So this is you know, and when the political winds change, it's going to be used against the left. I mean, during the Bush years, there were anti-war protesters who were considered low-level terrorists by the Department of Defense because they were protesting against the war. How absurd is that? But so this, you know, it's the problem is you wind up in a Stasi government, whether it's controlled by the left or the right, you're still in a Stasi government.
Brian.
Well,
we have about,
and that's
minutes.
Something else that I forgot to mention is the food stamp situation. I mean, right? I believe in 2008 it was 38 million people on food stamps. Now it's 50 million. So you have a huge subsection of the country that is essentially totally dependent on the government for their own survival. And I'm not necessarily judging those people. I'm saying that that's not sustainable for our society in general. If there's a crisis situation, if the dollar collapses, those food stamps stop. And you have 50 million starving people immediately.
And we don't see the extent of how many people are on food stamps because there aren't food lines anymore.
Right.
They're hidden. The food line is this little plastic card now. We don't see that. I would add something that was said earlier. We have allowed this to happen, and we allow folks to divide us. You know, I don't like this Republican, Democrat, left, right, you know, radical, not radical, you know, division that is created by folks, particularly and unfortunately in the media. What happened to being a self-reliant, God-fearing American that love freedom in the Constitution? I thought that's what all brought us together. Why aren't we talking that way? That's the way I want to be labeled. You want to label me anyway? That's the way I want to be labeled.
We have about 5 minutes. Did anybody answer a question?
Could you address the importance of being prepared for the future of getting constitutionally educated and committed local officials, local county commissioners, sheriffs, election?
Let me talk about that real quick. Just as fast as I can talk about something that deep. The importance is everything because a lot of times in places like Olympia and Washington, D.C., the Constitution is completely ignored simply because they don't know what's in it. When I raise a hand privately, you know, talk to legislators behind closed doors, how many of them have actually read the state Constitution? And not a lot have. What is Article 1 in the Washington State Constitution? What is Article 1, Section 32 on fundamental principles and a return to fundamental principles and how key that is to freedom? They don't even know it's there. So first we've got to do what we say we believe. We've got to read that stuff. And it's important because they can make the good decisions and see what we're all seeing. Hey, if we're self-reliant as individuals, as a community, as a county, as a city, as a town, as a state, we can weather a lot of storms that way together. So that's one of the main reasons to support.
Any other questions? Gentlemen, would you like to do a wrap-up? We've got 5 minutes left.
Stuart,
final statements you'd like to make?
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of piggyback on that, that's what we're doing with the Oath Keepers, because we realized, like when I served as a paratrooper, they didn't teach us much about the Constitution. And that's fine if all you're doing is using the military overseas. The laws of war are sufficient. But when they use them here at home, like they did during Katrina, for example, and increasingly they're using them here at home, then they run up against the Bill of Rights, and they have to know what's in there, because that's as important as the laws of war. And the same thing goes for the Beat Cop. And the threshold question we always ask them is, have you read the Constitution? And if they haven't read it, we say, well, look, how can you possibly keep an oath to defend it if you've never read it? And so they got to read it. They don't read it in school. Just like it was said earlier, they no longer learn civics. And so that's what we're really trying to do, is prick their conscience, get them to at least read the Constitution, and start thinking. And the whole point of our Declaration of Tenet Orders is to be like a start point for them to consider. They might disagree with me on some of those. You know, some of them, you know, some folks consider it kind of controversial, like not imposing martial law on a state that declares its sovereignty. I've got reasons why I wrote it that way and why our officers agree with it, but I don't care if you disagree with me. The point is to get you thinking about the Constitution, and that's the threshold ground level. Thinking about it and knowing what's in it, and then being dedicated to it. We can have honest disagreements between, I'm sure that Matt and I can probably find points of disagreement on the Constitution or original intent. You can get that between people of goodwill. But the question is first of all, do they know it, and are they of goodwill? If they don't know it, they don't belong in office. You can cure ignorance. You can cure it by teaching them the Constitution. But if they then are not someone of goodwill and don't care, And we've had some legislators come out right out and say they don't really care what's in the Constitution. They just pass the laws, leave it to the courts to decide later on whether it's right or wrong. That, we think, is inexcusable. And then you've got people who are blatantly violating the Constitution who know damn well what they're doing. Guys like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, when they wrote the detention provisions in the NDAA, I consider them traitors because they are knowingly making war on the American people through the laws of war. And so, to me, there's different levels of culpability. If you can redeem somebody in your local legislature, whether it's the town, county, state, whatever, or congressionally, then go for it. Try to get them at least to become sincere students of the Constitution. Even if you disagree with them, at least they're being honest now about why they're voting for something. They know, rather than just saying, I'm just going to vote for it and let the courts decide. So, but if they're not, if they know what they're doing and they're still willfully violating it, then you got to purge them out. And that means Republicans too, especially Republicans. Nothing worse than a Republican who wraps himself in the flag while he violates the Constitution. It means it's disgusting.
I think it's absolutely vital that people become more proactive in their own independence. And what that means is being able to provide for yourself and sustain yourself. And that includes community, too. And during the Great Depression, California had 300,000 people involved in barter markets during the Great Depression. I don't see hardly any bartering going on in America right now. I really think that we need to return to that community element, self-sustaining, and keeping the wealth within our towns, within our counties. And that's really up to you guys. You can't just leave here and say, well, that was a nice talk that those guys gave, and then sit down and do nothing. You have to start being proactive and making things happen. You know, if that means starting a barter market or buying a year's worth of food or, learning a skill, set aside 3 to 6 months and learn a valuable skill, and you'd be so much better off, and your community would be better off because you're there to help them. I really think we have to do this. We have to do it now.
I guess I would end where we began. Is the economy going to collapse if we continue down this road? Yes. Should Americans be self-reliant? Absolutely. What does that mean? I think it means just very simply, do what we say we believe, quit going to the government for our needs, owe no one anything. If we do that, I think that's an expression of love. I think loving our neighbors is being prepared to give them food. Loving our neighbors is being prepared to protect them. That's what it means to fulfill our civic duty. That's what it means to fulfill our duty as Christians. And I guess what I would say last is very simply this, that by doing that, by being self-reliant as people, as being self-reliant as a community, being self-reliant as a city and a town, being self-reliant as a county, being self-reliant as a state, by doing that, we'll be better off as a country, better off as a people, so we can continue to be that shining light, that shining beacon on a hill, so that freedom can continue to be a good word throughout the world and throughout humanity.
Oathkeepers.org.
One thing I want to add at the end is also is that we, even though the media like to pick up on gun stuff, we emphasize the most critical things being food, then the next critical ones are communications and medical. Those are the three things that are most difficult to improvise. Everyone's got guns. We can improvise security. But if you don't have food, you're going to starve to death, and you got to have communications, and you got to have medical. You got to have those things. Either you got radios or you don't, either you got medical supplies or you don't. So I put your emphasis on things other than shooting. Lots of guys are really into their guns, but they don't have any ham radios. They got no trauma kit. And so I think that's really dumb. So I think you should really focus on your medical and your communications. And we always talk about, kind of like Matt said, start with you and then your family, then your neighborhood. We advocate neighborhood watches as a good way to get your neighbors on board and thinking about, and once again, not always just about crime, but also about ice storms, power outages, making sure the widow down the street doesn't freeze to death, making sure that she's not snowed in and buried in her house, which happens. So, and then you can get into things like your veterans associations. We go into all the veterans halls and tell them, look, guys, you are the local civil defense unit. Whether you like it or not, yep, whether you realize it or not, when the crap hits the fan, you're going to be the ones people turn to. You got the experience, you've got the leadership potential right there. You're already formed up into a group. See yourself as the pool for the sheriff's posse, the security team, and make sure you don't wind up with a Mad Max situation. So we're really going out to the veterans organizations in particular, try to wake them up to their responsibilities. But the same should be going on in your church. You belong to a church. If your church is not organizing mutual aid and food storage like the LDS do, they got the right idea. If your church is not doing that, they're dropping the ball, really. They should be doing that. They used to do it. Why aren't they doing it anymore? So, and then you can get into your government. Then if you get your city on board and you get your county on board, great. But if you don't, do it yourselves.
What a great group of patriots. This was a great panel. All of these were the men that you just heard from, Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, Brandon Smith from altmarket.net, Representative Matt Shea, 4th District, Washington State Representative, and John Mackey. All of them were speaking at some point or another at the rally, and they were responding to the media coverage, but what they had to say went above and beyond that and really got to share some of the ideals that we share with all of you. I wanted to share that with all of you. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and wind things down. You guys have a great week. Don't forget to catch Codename Chloe's Partisan Diaries, which are coming up here in just a minute. This is the sixth and final segment of the Women of World War II, titled The Quiet Hero. It's the story of Vera Adkins, who trained many of the women that you've heard about and read about. And part two of the Partisan Diaries are forthcoming. This first part was the women of World War II, and Codename Chloe is working on part two, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. She's done an amazing job, and let's see here. Also, we missed Fox 519 this evening. He had some technical difficulties and did not get an eye on the economy out to us this week, but that's okay because we kind of blew through the news and commentary just because we wanted to bring you this special coverage of the press conference roundtable discussion that took place in Coeur d'Alene this last Thursday. Check out the highlights and resources posting for the video that was produced by Northwest Liberty News out of Kalispell, and we were happy to partner with them and help them cover the cost of producing that video. So hope you enjoy that, embed that, and pass it along, right along with Radio Free Redoubt to all your like-minded friends and family. Okay, until we see you next week for episode 13-21, we're going to cover American Redoubt concepts and goals and ideas, where we hope to go, what our vision is for the American Redoubt. Hopefully it'll be an encouragement to you and we'll all learn something together. God bless all of you who are making your way to the American Redoubt, those who are here trying to be effective within your communities, making the American Redoubt stronger. God bless all of you, and just have a blessed week. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.
You're listening to Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt.